Hey folks, it's Jamie here. Welcome you to another edition of Movie Moan, the TMT podcast. Joining me as always is our British gentleman agent, Mr. Phil G. Say hello, sir.
Hello, everybody. Apparently we are out of the dark spell of lack of film news. Apparently there's the interesting shit to talk about this week. We're going to talk about it. We've got a great movie that I didn't see, and they're going to gloat about that in a second. Our good friend Mr. Lou Sisma is not with us at the moment. He might teleport in a little bit later. We're not quite sure. But sitting next to us, as always, your favourite and mine, Captain Ed Hocken, star of The Ed Hocken Show on BrainDreadRadio.com.
Yes, thank you, Phil. And just to let you know, folks, a new episode should be coming up shortly where there's some technical issues, unfortunately, out at the site. Now, I have no control over that sort of thing, so I'm just going to sit here and wait till I'm notified to post the link over at Chud. But as always, it's great to be here, and we've definitely, as Jamie has said, we've definitely got something interesting to talk about here.
Yeah, Social Network opened this week after months and months of hype. And I will say right off the bat, well-earned hype. I mean, it lives up to it. It's a quite excellent movie. Hawken and I saw it this weekend. Phil hasn't seen it yet. When does it open, buddy?
Late October. My choice is next week, Wall Street 2, and that's it.
So I would choose That's It.
Exactly.
I think that's the better choice.
Just spend that money on alcohol, just so you're better off.
Yeah. So, late October's not that bad. It's not too bad of a – it's a good release date for a movie like this. Yeah, I must say I loved it. I wasn't really against the movie when they first announced it because you go like, well, you know, you don't know what it's about. But it's nice to see that Aaron Sorkin actually write a movie that lives up to his writing talent now because, you know, I mean, Charlie Wilson's War and did a couple other ones that weren't that awesome. But, man, this is – I can't think of a bad – I honestly cannot think of a single negative thing to say about this flick off the top of my head. What about you, Ed?
Oh, I agree. I definitely think that Aaron Sorkin, while a fantastic writer, has to be couched in some way. Before I saw this movie, I just tried to watch an episode of Studio 60 again. I didn't need to be reminded of that. And the fact I think you had Aaron Sorkin – working with characters that you could see them talking about this kind of basically talking this kind of talk, and it was couched with the beautiful work by David Fincher and his cinematographer. I just know he's the son of the guy who did the cinematography for Blade Runner.
It was Jordan Cronenweth.
Truly an amazing movie, And I definitely see that it would definitely be a contender for Best Picture of the Year. And if anything, it's certainly one of the top movies of the year, in terms of just how great it is. And I have to say, some people may say, you know, it's the Facebook movie, why should I care? Plus, there's a lot of computer jargon, and at points I didn't even know what the hell is going on just because of how fast, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, Jesse Eisenberg was talking. Now, the thing is, are people going to be turned off by that? Perhaps, but I was thinking about this earlier, and they said, well, ER was on for God knows how many decades, and people, when ER first showed up, people were saying, no one's going to understand this jargon. So I can say if you're afraid that you're not going to understand the computing parts, don't worry about it, because I sure as hell didn't.
But they had pretty people saying the jargon, Hawk, and that's the difference,
Jesse Eisenberg isn't necessarily an ugly man, but...
No, but he's not George Clooney. I'm just saying.
True. But these aren't the nerds from Revenge of the Nerds either, so...
Thank God. That would
well,
not
John
be...
Goodman didn't just show up.
Anytime you ever say that, I just think of that Simpsons gag. Yeah. Let's get him!
Curly, straight.
Basically that these kinds of guys, even though that they are nerds, party that hard, which is... something to behold. As I said, really fantastic. And as I was saying off air, in some alternate universe, you probably would have seen this kind of movie for Bill Gates and Steve Jobs 15 years ago. And I bet Bill Gates was like, man, I'm glad I just got away with a TNT movie of the week. So this really was fantastic. And I think it definitely should have word of mouth. It really is deserving of its praise. And if anything, even if you're not into the internet, you don't really care about social networking, it's still a classic, you know, the growth of a business titan, and then he screws out his friend's stories, you know, stuff we've seen from, say, Citizen Kane.
Right.
And it's, once again, replayed. And
it's also kind of, it's also a brave choice to make your lead, your protagonist, a dickhead. With no redeeming quality. He's not, there is not one moment in this movie where you look at Zuckerberg and go, I like that guy.
Well, it's basically it's like the Daniel Plainview kind of tactic is that you can make a character be unlikable. You damn well better make him interesting.
He's otherwise, interesting.
You have no interest in this, no desire to watch this character. In my view,
it's almost like he has a mental disorder. That's what I kept thinking. Like this guy's.
Well, as I was saying, on my show, it's like, well, what a shock that this computer genius is a weirdo. You know, it's like, what a shock. And for people who have seen Zuckerberg in talk, and it's probably similar. Now, a lot of people have said, whether this is true, no one's talking. So basically, who cares? So.
But basically, what you're telling me is, if I like Mark Zuckerberg in this film, I am Mark Zuckerberg.
You've got something wrong if you end up walking out of the movie liking his character, is all I'll say.
I can say you may not necessarily like his character, but at least for me, I understood some of the decisions he was doing. So, just for me, because I love seeing I love these kinds of business stories played out. And it's funny to me as I'm sitting there and I'm looking at later on when Sean Parker, who was the founder of Napster, played by Justin Timberlake, who's fantastic in this. He really is. And I look at, and it's the two of them, and it's like, these two guys, for what it's worth, even though Napster no longer exists, and Facebook, we'll see what happens to Facebook, basically changed, changed a lot of industry. If anything, changed the world to a certain respect. Because I won't get into the details completely about Napster, but Napster pretty much gutted the music industry, or, set the downfall for that ongoing mess. And then you have Facebook as what it is. And I personally enjoyed, and there's not really spoilers to this movie, the last scene, because it's a very universal thing for anyone who has a Facebook.
It was the perfect way to end the movie, I thought.
I would definitely say this movie falls in the vein of All the President's Men. I personally like to think of it also as David Fincher's, The Insider. That's the way I like to think of it. Although The Insider has a more traditional structure, the Social Network has a very innovative structure. Some people may have heard this is like a Rashomon kind of way of, well, I heard it was like this, and I heard it was like this. Some critic I had read, I forgot the guy's name, had said, well, it's kind of a red herring. That's true, because the structure is that, yes, it's from different opinions, but it's in the set of a deposition, and it whipsaws because there's a couple of depositions going on because this movie only takes place 7 years ago. And so all this stuff is still being hashed out as to what's going to happen. But it was certainly fantastic, and definitely a highlight for this year.
Absolutely. Yeah. If I have a chance to see it again, I will absolutely take the opportunity. Highly recommended. Movie news.
God, I hate living in this country. I really do sometimes.
It's not that long, sir. It really isn't. I mean, October is a great time to have this kind of movie out. So.
Oh, I agree. This is definitely a fall release. I have the feeling, it wasn't made for a whole lot of money. This should get word of mouth. Because I think a lot of people are going to be turned off like, why should I see a movie about Facebook? Why should I see a movie that was set 7 years ago? Because I know I had those feelings. But when I went and saw this, it was fantastic. It really was. It probably elevated the written material, too, of the actual book, although they say the book is not bad. I've read other stuff written by that guy, Ben Mezrich. This is very, very this isn't deep stuff we're dealing with here. They are kind of trashy reads. So although because he had written the book that was based for 21, the book, which is called Bringing Down the House, is far better than that movie. And and by the way, folks, watch the opening credits because you see, surprisingly, this movie was one of the producers is Kevin Spacey. So
took me by surprise.
Well, if this movie wins Best Picture, that means he gets a third Oscar, I think. So
I think he's listed as the executive producer, actually, so would not get the Oscar. Yeah, there's four producers listed, actually. I noticed this, and I thought about that while I was watching the movie because for a while, the Academy rule was you can only have it down to three people, and I think they've changed that yet again. So, theoretically, all four people could get their Oscar.
I know I had the feeling it was like when I was watching Good Will Hunting, then they showed executive produced by Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier. It's like, well, if this movie had won Best Picture, would we have now known him as Oscar-winning Kevin Smith?
I mean, I don't think we'll ever hear that phrase used.
No. No, and I have to say, once again, the casting was top-notch in this movie, and Jesse Eisenberg, you know, for the people that think he's, you know, basically Michael Cera, that is extremely lazy thinking. He was... I fully expect him to get nominated. I just thought he was amazing.
He should be. I really don't think he will, but I hope to God he does, because he is quite stupendous.
You really got to pay attention to how he does it, because a lot of people are going to think, oh, he's just playing a computer nerd, or he's playing a robot. But there's definitely, you got to pay attention. It's just that you just can't see what the guy's thinking. That's the thing. I'd listened to the AV Club's review of this movie, and they basically said the guy's very opaque. Basically a black box there who rarely blinks, and you can just see the eyes dart around, and then you know he's got, you know, and he's probably thinking at least five steps ahead of you.
That's what I noticed in the trailer. Given to what you're talking about, Ed, about what people might be turned off about seeing it, let me tell you, I mean, I've seen the trailer like 5 times in front of other movies, and what sold me about it was nothing to do with the actual subject matter, the fact that it's based on a true story, the fact that it's Facebook, anything of that. It was him. I love seeing movies about self-destructive assholes who destroy their lives even further. But really, even more than that, I saw his performance just in the context of a trailer, and saw that unblinkingness and that scene in the boardroom where he's standing at the other thing and says, yes, what do you understand? What don't you understand? Which part? That bit you understand. And I just said, I want to see this guy's story. So I'm kind of puzzled as to why people might be turned off about it, because
it's lazy thinking. It's lazy, and they don't bother to do any research. As I said, I mean, I was really surprised that Aaron Sorkin, he was, as I said, amazing in this. And, you know, because I remember when you tried to watch Studio 60, he always had a real bug up his rear about, you know, bloggers and the internet and all that. And he, like I said, it was couched very well in this. Because, once again, you could see these characters talking like that, and it does fit. I mean, admittedly, it could be, some people could say the dialogue's being a bit too clever, but these are all incredibly intelligent people that may not necessarily know what they're talking about, as was said from the AV Club. So I like this a lot better than even Charlie Wilson's War, to be honest. I mean, that was just because I like the more limited focus of The Social Network. Because if you think about it, the movie begins in November, in the fall of 2003, and basically, with the exception of the deposition scenes, stops in probably the late summer of 2004, if you think about it. That's something. And those are usually the best kinds of, true story like movies, where it's focused on one thing. It isn't spread over years, which we've seen dozens and dozens of times before. Because that's the problem I have with Charlie Wilson's War. I felt it was a bit too rushed. So
it's nice also, to meet everyone who's seen that film.
Everyone who's going to benefit from this movie acting wise. I mean, everyone is so good in this movie. Obviously, there's Garfield, who is really good in this film, I have to say. I mean, like, you can kind of get a gauge for how he's going to play Peter Parker off this movie. He's basically a genuinely decent guy who's fucked over big time.
I will say, yeah, he comes off as probably the most sympathetic character.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to say he's without sin here. So, I mean, you know, this guy was an investing genius, and I mean, basically, from what I saw, I could see what Zuckerberg was trying to do. Like I said, I can understand the decisions he was trying to, and basically the fallout from what Eduardo Severin was trying to do. It was just two different approaches, and, you know, it's just unfortunate that when you hear about these, you know, stories of great, you know, companies and things, there's just, you know, these things do happen where there's fallout.
Although I'm still kind of, we talked about this off air, but real quickly, is like, you know, Rooney Mara, very good in what little she is in this movie, but you still don't have, unlike Garfield, you'd really, it's still
there,
kind of
no
a question mark.
Off of what she can do. Because she was, I mean, for one thing, and it's been said repeatedly, her character is a complete fiction. There was no, you know, girl like that. Apparently, at least from the press, although I would also probably say public relations, that Zuckerberg's been basically with the same, you know, girl for the past 6 years. If for Rooney Mara, she's going to be playing Elizabeth Salander. That's a completely different character from this. I mean, is it possible to get an idea of how someone's going to be for one scene? Possibly. The only time I've ever really got, well, there's two times. One, Chris Hemsworth from Star Trek, but that was 5 minutes, or at least 15 minutes, I'm not sure, of him doing stuff. And then the only other time I can think of this is when they cast Matt Smith as the new Doctor. I went to watch In Bruges, and there's a deleted scene with him in it. So, and that was just a great scene. So that was like probably the only time it's like I can get an idea of that, you know, you could see someone doing something like this.
Yep. So I don't disagree. Yep. I mean,
all I could say is people don't think that Michael Cera could have pulled this off. Don't.
Oh God, no! Just
that wouldn't have worked at all. So
not knocking Michael Cera, but just, you know.
Yeah, no. Michael Cera can. I think the big distinction is that, you know, Jesse Eisenberg tends to do more dramatic roles. I never watched Squid and the Whale. I thought it was pretty good in Adventureland. There's also another movie called Roger Dodger I tried watching, which I couldn't really get into. He's oddly enough in another movie called The Education of Charlie Banks, which is directed by Fred Durst, of all people, which is why I never watched it. But this is going to be, you know, great stuff for him. He's definitely had, you know, some, you know, good work, and he's definitely going to continue with that. Like, as I said,
especially with his performance.
Yes, as I said, I definitely. It will not. I won't get mad if the Academy doesn't nominate him. But as I said, I mean, if, you know, the way I see it is if there's been. I mean, Jeremy Renner, who was great in The Hurt Locker, you know, could get nominated. I'm sure he this guy could. And as I said, if the Academy has a track record of awarding awards for people who play real life people and people with some kind of mental issue, he's got it locked in the bag. So
that's true, actually.
Yeah, as I said, I mean, it would have been very easy for someone else other than Eisenberg to have really, you know, screwed this role up. The one last thing is that I was thinking about, because especially the way Eisenberg talks in this movie, which is a very fast-clipped way, this could have been easily butchered. And the best way I could think of it is that I like to think of Oliver Stone's W in one of the greatest what-the-fuck acting approaches I've ever seen in film. Is Thandi Newton as Condi Rice, which is one of the worst things I've ever seen, because she essentially was a living, breathing Muppet. And for anyone who didn't, I guess, do it right, and it would have been a very fine line, that you would have gotten that. And it basically would have been parody.
I haven't seen W, so I can't really comment. That's the one thing everyone always points out, though, is how just absolutely off the mark she is in that movie.
Oh, it's horrible. It really begs the question of who else. I mean, who approved this? So, I mean, I can understand if it was
time.
Some kind of...
That's what it was. Time approved it. It's like, we got to get this thing going. Yeah, that's fine. Let's go.
Yeah.
That's what.
And
that's
I will also
want to
mention one other thing, at least on my screening, and I know yours did also. A fantastic trailer for the True Grit. The teaser's amazing. The trailer was even better.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this is probably one of the last, if not the last movie, well, one of the last movies for me that I look forward to seeing this year, because I never followed with Harry Potter.
I'll check out Potter, but I'm not really excited. But yeah, absolutely, I can't wait to see this. And
the Coen brothers have already directed a Western before, which is No Country for Old Men. This could, I mean, from what we gather from the trailer, and trailers can be misleading, of course. This could definitely fall into that rare category of the remake doing that improves on the original. And, you know, of course, I've never really watched a lot of John Wayne movies, but, you know, he wasn't in the best of shape when he did True Grit in 69, which he won his Oscar for, so.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't in good shape with most of his movies, it looked like. I mean, again, that's just my gauge, having just, like, seen the guy around, not really watching his movies, really, but they all seem the same to me, let me put it like that. I've seen a couple, but, you know.
I think the greatest piece of trivia I ever read about John Wayne is that it was reported that he once had a clause in his contract that filming could not begin until he took a dump in the morning.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I'm glad he got that contractually, you know, like, agreed upon. You know,
and then the people would say, well, the way he walked, well, who wouldn't, so. Yeah. I mean,
we'll have
really.
Another fun fact next week, completely destroying the myth of great Hollywood film stuff.
Yeah, wait till we get to Sean Connery. No. okay, anyway.
Some bad films. Shh.
Who's this?
I was actually bald for over 40 years, so.
That's true. Okay, so news this week. Phil mentioned we had a lot to talk about. We do. What do we got, Phil?
Okay, well, first of all, let's talk about this one first of all, actually,
okay.
Why don't we?
Okay.
Turns out that Moriarty, the supervillain nemesis of Sherlock Holmes, one of the great iconic villains of literature of all time, a role that absolutely has to be nailed in the writing and is going to make or break the sequel to Sherlock Holmes, very successful film, has been cast. Moriarty has been cast, and it's, as is always the case in these things these days, somebody we never even thought would be considered. It's a Jared Harris. Who's Jared Harris? Well, as I was saying off air, I know him best as adult Will Robinson in that horrible Lost in Space movie. You might have also recognized him as the sea captain from Benjamin Button. And also he was he's in Mad Men, but I don't know anything about Mad Men, but he's playing Moriarty. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
He's great on Mad Men, and, you know, it was a pretty ingenious choice. Not Daniel Day-Lewis or Brad Pitt, as people expected. I guess that means they don't want to overshadow Downey on the marquee. But, you know, very great actor. I think he's a pretty good choice. I'm curious to see what he does with this.
I agree. He's a very good – he's great in Mad Men, and for those also that don't know, he's the son of Richard Harris, who is mostly – you know, most of you know
him. Junkalot.
Yes, and Dumbledore before before he passed, and that man could outdrink anybody. So, but anyway,
maybe Jared can. We don't know.
I don't want to test that theory out. I mean, there was that class of British thespian actors that could, just drink, get into fights, bang a lot of women, and still be able to film Oscar caliber winning roles.
Rex Harrison comes to mind.
Oliver Reed. And
Peter O'Toole was
Peter O'Toole
on that list for a
little.
Michael Caine, probably.
Well, I don't know about Michael Caine.
I could see him in his younger days doing that.
Yeah, I think
Richard
Harris didn't like Michael Caine, actually, from what I've read. I don't think
they were
the same pubs.
Now I remember. Also, Richard Harris was in also an Unforgiven. So getting curb
stomped.
So, but. Jamie's right, as I said, Jared Harris, they probably want to go with someone who didn't overshadow Danny. Although I have to say, this is a bit of a disappointment, just because you would think, if they were talking about Moriarty, they would want someone with such a high-caliber lead.
Yeah.
To really, you know, match wits here.
That's why it kind of made sense for Brad Pitt and also Daniel Day-Lewis, because someone who could hold their own against, who can, match their wits on screen with Downey, and those two guys Pitt could have done it, and certainly Day-Lewis, but
the thing I find interesting about it is that by casting Jared Harris, you kind of get an impression of where they're going with the character. Now, if Jared is listening, in that 1-to-1,000,000 chance that he is listening, take this the right way, sir, but you do have a very unusual face. You're a very scary face, actually, sometimes.
Kind of frog-esque, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. So, by not casting Pitt or Day-Lewis, you can tell they're not trying to make a kind of handsome guy, basically, some kind of really slick, stylistic guy who's, like, tall and handsome and can
It's certainly a step up from the last time they tried to cast Moriarty, and that was in The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Wasn't that Richard Roxburgh?
That's right.
he who shall not be named.
Oh, man.
We
certainly have a step up, as I said, and he's really, really good Mad Men, and I'm sure he'll be fine. I think for some people that were expecting Brad Pitt, it seems like a shock. I mean, with Sherlock, I saw Sherlock Holmes, I thought it was all right. I didn't think it was that great. I mean, I have no desire to see it again, but
the villains let it down.
And you need a real high class villain, and you know, they kind of took the Batman Begins technique of they put a lesser villain in, and then they're going to put in the main villain. The problem with Sherlock Holmes is that after Moriarty, I don't know who else they got.
Yeah, there is no secondary villain. It's just Moriarty. That's
I'm sure Nick Meyer's banging on my door right now to clarify this issue, but
nice.
But
it doesn't matter who's playing this part. As we talked about a couple of months ago, they just have to nail the writing of this character. If it doesn't work, if he is not smarter, than Holmes, in, at least, you know, for the majority of the film, then, of course, he'll get defeated at the end, then the movie doesn't work.
Shock.
I mean, that's, I enjoyed Sherlock Holmes. I imagine that I enjoyed it a bit more than Ed, actually, but my problem was that you never had any doubt, which is kind of a problem with Sherlock Holmes as a character, I suppose. You never had any doubt that he was going to solve this, that he was in any trouble, and that he could outwit these villains. They just weren't too clever, really, and, of course...
Wasn't that the more interesting dynamic was between Sherlock and then his brother, Mycroft Holmes? And I had always heard they wanted Stephen Fry to play this guy.
He's playing it.
Yeah, he got cast this week, yeah.
Oh, that's...
Fry is playing his brother in the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Noomi Rapace. God, I can't even pronounce her name right.
Rapace?
Yeah, Rapace is playing the female lead.
Well, we'll see how that goes. I mean, once again, it kind of goes back to going talking about Rooney Mara. You can't see her as Lisbeth Salander. Now, I haven't seen Noomi Rapace in anything else except as Lisbeth Salander. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to be.
She's playing a gypsy, a correction there, in the Holmes sequel.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there you go. So.
A small sadistic part of me does want them to ape Batman Begins, and it'll turn out that Stephen Fry is Moriarty in the third act. It'll turn out the other guy's sister. Wouldn't it just?
That'd be the wittiest villain ever. So, a while ago I saw his work as Oscar Wilde in the biography he did. He was amazing in that.
It's a great film. It's a really great.
Not only is that a great movie, but he was able to somehow nail Jude Law on top of that.
And that was Jude Law before he was Jude Law. I think that was his first. I don't know if it was his first film, but it was definitely his first.
Probably one of his
major
first
film.
Major. Yeah. Before he got oversaturated, of course.
And Bloom's in that. Is it not 2 hour running time?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Sheen as well.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
You should check it out, Jamie.
He's just Tony Blair all the time. So.
Exactly.
Playing some other British real-life figure.
I don't think he's Tony Blair in Tron Legacy.
Although I won't lie. At one point, I did expect them to think of Michael Sheen for Moriarty. I was like, maybe. Well, who's British who could play this role? Michael Sheen?
Michael Sheen is not. He can be good. I mean, I saw him in The Damned United. He was very good. It's just that. I wonder how it is in England where it's like Michael Sheen is going to show up. It's like, okay, what public figure is he going to play this time? So
he hasn't played Prince Charles yet.
That's true. Well, there you go, Phil. You're going to go see that, man.
Yeah.
Well, no, if you've seen The Queen, you know that the guy they got to play Prince Charles, he's pretty bang on. I don't even remember.
That doesn't matter. They can still get a movie all about Charles. Like, that matters all of a sudden.
We do have secret Michael Sheen cloning facilities in this country. Because that's basically him and
funny,
my...
I didn't see him in the Red Riding trilogy, though. He was not there, though. So, but a mustacheless Paddy Considine... I can't pronounce his last name.
Constantine, isn't it?
Considine. That's it. Yeah. He's got... Clean-shavenness, it's quite a surprise. So.
Moving on. Let's see, what else we got, Phil? I'll bring up this one because it was – there's been an Alien two Alien prequels in development for a while, and Ridley Scott has been pretty adamant he's going to direct and produce it. Big shocker here, and I say that sarcastically.
I can't tell, Jamie. You're so transparent.
I know. I'm so mortified by this happening. No, there's some troubles hit the road. Apparently, Scott wants a big, violent, expensive movie, and Fox doesn't. Apparently, the budget he's proposed to them is somewhere in the vicinity of $250 million, and he wants a hard R with all that good violence and gore and just good old fashioned family entertainment. They aren't as nuts about the idea. Let me just say here, can you blame the studio? That's a lot of money to be blowing at a property like this, particularly after Ridley Scott's delivered a couple of really pricey underperformers lately. I don't want to sound like, oh, just let the filmmaker make the movie. I don't want to see a goddamn Alien prequel. I have no interest in seeing where the space junkie came from. I'd rather see you take that $250 million and make something else.
Make Avatar 2 instead. Yes, I agree with you, Jamie. Putting wind down, I'm just kidding. I both agree and disagree with you, sir. I agree in the way that you're absolutely right. Just from a pure business standpoint, Ridley Scott is not... he's not a successful director at the moment. The last successful thing he made was... Actually, I can't remember. What was it?
I think it was American Gangster.
I guess so, yeah. But Ridley Scott, as I explained a couple of weeks ago, has just about made its money back. And I'm not even sure about that, given, you know, how sometimes studios aren't honest about their budget. But apparently it cost $200 million. It's just about made over that. Throw in marketing, it might not have even broke even. I'm not quite sure. Kingdom of Heaven was a big underperformer as well, even though, you know, they redeemed that thing on DVD, and I love that movie. Fact is, it's just not right. But what I will say is, how did this not occur to the studio until now, that this movie, and the movie that's going to be a prequel, and I imagine will take place on the alien planet, might cost a little bit of money and might be violent? I can't, this is why I hate Fox, Jamie. They always fucking do this. They are, it just feels, look, and I'm doing this from the perspective of an outsider.
I can tell.
I don't really know what's going on out there, thank you. I don't really know what's going on in there. But it just seems to me like they string along Scott for a little while, and then it suddenly occurs to him, oh, hey, those alien movies, they're pretty violent, weren't they? I mean, those characters have acid for blood. They kill people with their spiky tails and stuff. We don't want that.
Yeah, they want a PG-13 alien movie. You go, come on.
Fucking AVP movies, which I didn't see, by the way, they weren't even PG-13. They were R-rated movies. I believe they were, anyway.
They were.
This is just... I can't believe this didn't occur to them before. There's no way... Well, I say there's no way, we don't know.
I think plenty of things. I think plenty of things occur to people. They just don't want to address it. It's like that whole, like, fucking retarded Ryan Reynolds, will he do Deadpool bullshit. It's like, come on. Like, the moment he took on Green Lantern, you goddamn well knew, like, oh, okay, so he's not going to do Deadpool. And, of course, they're still stringing that along. And it's obviously he's not going to be Deadpool in a movie again. It's the same thing. Like, yeah, they knew this was going to be a problem. Just they strung it along. Who's fucking surprised? You know, I'm not going to cry over
Akira.
This.
Hey, Akira's going to be Akira. Expensive.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Shocking.
And
like,
no one is asking to see a live-action Akira movie. That is going to be unfilmable. There's no way that can be done. And there's not... just really, I mean... There's no reason to do that.
I get a headache thinking about it. It's like, how do you translate that on the silver screen in live action?
Well,
there's a reason why it was animated in the first place.
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
unless you want to do it, you know, all green screen, where it looks even weirder.
It's going to look... And then really, for what happens at the end, only David Cronenberg could pull that off. And
yes.
That's going to make people violently ill in the theater.
That movie will, in fact, come... Your ticket will come with a barf bag, if that's the case. You know.
One last thing
I want
to say about...
literally sell insurance policies before you enter.
I'd love to go to a movie where that happens. I really would. Look, if it actually happens, if I see a trailer for Akira, I'm going to pay attention. Even if it's a complete car wreck, I'm going to say, I want to be there for that car wreck. The film, as animated, is barely intelligible. I can't imagine it being coherent.
It's always been said with that story that you have to read the manga.
Hmm.
Multi-volume. We're talking possibly even longer than anything related by Ayn Rand. And as bad as that is, this is even worse. So, I mean, it's a huge, I think it's 17-volume series.
Yeah, it's pretty thick.
It's unbelievable.
And make that into a two-hour movie.
Yeah, there's no way in hell. No way in hell.
So,
back to Alien for a second. There's one last thing I do want to say about it, and this is what I'm really afraid of, guys. I'm really afraid. I mean, I think people are assuming at the moment, yeah, and I can understand why, that this thing's just going to, you know, die a death very quickly now because of the setback. You do, that's fine.
I think it's the beginning of the obvious, which is a movie I never thought was going to happen anyway. So,
and we're glad about that because, like you said, Jamie, it doesn't need to be made. If people think they want to know where that space jockey comes from,
I don't even think people think they want to know. I think this is just like, you know, Fox figures, either Fox or Ridley Scott thinks they want to know.
Well, I see. That's what
I think. It's just because Fox wants a franchise. It's unfortunate.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of. What I'm afraid of is they're basically going to, because Fox decides they need this film for whatever reason, they're going to browbeat Ridley Scott till he leaves, and then they're going to fast-track it into production with just another director, with a shooter, like X-Men. They're going to make this movie no matter what, and they're going to make it on their terms, and that terrifies me, quite honestly. At least if Ridley Scott does it, even, I've always said about Ridley Scott, he's one of the defining directors of hit and miss, but when he misses, it's still fascinating to watch. I still find it fascinating, except for Robin Hood, which was just dull. But with this, if he makes it and it sucks, I'll still watch it because it will be fascinating to see how it went wrong. I don't want to see a bad Alien prequel, PG-13, made by just anybody. Made by friggin'...
So basically what you're saying is if you want anyone to screw the pooch, you want it to be Ridley Scott on this.
Pretty much, yeah. I don't want Len Wiseman directing this. It is Len Wiseman, isn't it?
Who's, yeah.
Actually, mind you, though, I'm kind of a mixed emotions, because if this gets him off the Total Recall remake, then that's a good thing.
You think that's a... Yeah.
I don't know, man. That's what I'm scared of. I'm just scared of that Fox is going to make it no matter what, and they're just going to make it on their terms, because that's what they do. You know I don't like Fox. I've said this too many times.
No, keep telling us. It sucks.
I just think they have a really piss poor way of managing their movies, their valuable properties. It's like X-Men First Class, again, is another perfect example of this. And, of course, we don't know if the movie's going to be any good or not, but they did completely rush it into production.
No, but they're recreating the opening scene from X-Men 1. That means it's good.
Oh, jeez.
Shrug.
why do we need that?
I have no idea. Just to show how great the first scene in X-Men was.
I've just got these horrible flashbacks that little 9-year-old Charlie is there outside the fence and he's going to dig a friggin' tunnel for Magneto to get through. They're all going to tie together. That's how he got out of the concentration camps. Xavier rescued him or some bullshit like that. Or Kevin Bacon, I don't know. I'm scared about that. But we'll see. But I just hate the way Fox rushes these movies, and it always shows, in my opinion. The movie is never as good as it could be because they friggin' rush it. Just my opinion.
Well, I'm not going to argue there. Mm-hmm. But at least Warner Brothers doesn't... apparently, as of late, they haven't been treating that way, their nope. filmmakers, since they're doing... You know, they got Chris Nolan over there. He's the MVP right now. Been that way for a while, apparently. But he's producing Superman.
I heard he's directing Batman 3.
I know, he confirmed the obvious there. Yeah, that he was directing it. Yeah, so he's producing Superman also. Last week, a list came out of who were purported to be the finalists. That's been challenged. Apparently, more names have come out as potential directors on this reboot for 2012 release. Darren Aronofsky has been mentioned. Ben Affleck was offered the gig, turned it down, and apparently Robert Zemeckis was eyeing it for a brief bit. Aronofsky, the hell? Like, I don't...
I read that offline. It was from the Inequal News Talkbacks that said, Robert Zemeckis for Superman? Is this 1990? So...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. 2000.
That would have made... That, I don't know about now, but would have certainly made sense.
Mid-90s to 2000 would have made sense for Zemeckis, and I would have been all for it, but... He's we'll get to old Bob in a minute here, but he's gotten himself in such in the gutter, I think, with this motion capture bullshit that
it's silly.
I don't
his name.
Care.
His last live action movie was what was it? What Lies Beneath or was it Castaway?
It's Castaway. So I don't think I want this guy going near. Like I don't think I want him doing Superman. In fact, I know I don't want him doing Superman.
Well, that means a lot coming from you.
Exactly.
And in some other world, there existed Robert Zemeckis' Superman, 1992. So
that would have been a hell of an interesting movie to watch.
Yes.
Darren Aronofsky, he was up for Batman, actually worked on it for a while. He was going to do Year One and had some very, let's be honest, stupid ideas as to how...
They were crazy.
They were insane. Like,
Alfred was going to be black, wasn't he?
He was going to be a jive-talking black man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and Bruce Wayne was going to live on the streets, and he was going to fight the Joker early on in the movie. It was pretty fucking nuts.
He's been talking to John Peters.
I think so. Alfred Ousky's been, I mean, what? He was rumored for Ronin for a while, I think. I think he's also been recently linked to possibly doing Preacher, which would probably be up his alley, although Preacher will never get made.
Preacher will never get made, and there's no way you could do Preacher in a movie. It has to, the story goes way too long to be in a two-hour movie.
The material's too controversial as well. It's like, that's why you would have to get independent financing. And
I mean, it'd have to be in a miniseries on HBO. I mean, if Dogma, basically as much trouble Dogma had, this is going to be a lot.
And Dogma was inoffensive. Dogma was just as the joke goes, like it was just a rubber poop monster, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just...
This is really puzzling me, though, guys. I'll tell you why, because I just figured that... I mean, if they're putting Aronofsky in the picture, this goes against everything I thought they were doing with this Superman movie, because, first of all, they have a script, don't they, by David Goyer.
They have a script by David Goyer, yes.
By David Goyer. Darren Aronofsky has never caught me as the kind of person who's just going to come on and shoot someone else's script by by David Goyer. And I thought they just wanted a safe filmmaker, a good filmmaker, but someone who's going to just read the script, film the script. This just doesn't ring true to me. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen at all.
Well, I mean, again,
his RoboCop remake fell through. Don't forget that, which I really wanted to see.
Not by his doing, to be fair. That's MGM shitting the bed, because since Hobbit's going to get greenlit any day now, wink, wink. I'm sorry, I'll believe that when I see it. I don't.
Say Hobbit and Lou appears. Hello, Lou.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not being antisocial. I'm just late.
No, he knew we were talking about Social Network, and then... said, I'm not going to join this. Because you didn't see it, did you, sir?
No, nor do I have any intention of seeing it.
There you go. See? But no, talking about Superman.
Link.
Yeah, exactly. Talking about Superman and the directors on board, the latest ones this week. Any thoughts on that, sir?
I don't really see Aronofsky as a good fit for that franchise myself. But I don't know. He's been a little too eclectic. I just don't see him as a brand name that they would want to put with this project. Plus, he's somebody that doesn't, in my opinion, bend to the will of the studio. Like, he has his own vision usually, and he usually wants to go with that. So
and it's been working well for him. He's been getting financing. I mean, just get finished Black Swan. He's been getting amazing reviews. I'm curious to see it myself. I mentioned a minute ago his comic books. He was also seriously up for the Wolverine sequel. So, I mean, maybe he just wants to make a couple of bucks.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. I mean, and if you're that's
gonna
not go, just... Oh, go ahead.
And if you're going to make a couple of bucks, you might as well do it with the premier superhero franchise that's available to do it with as well, so...
Yeah, and that's not to suggest, and I will to defend him, that's not to suggest, like, oh, that means he's going to do a dark and brooding Superman who's insane. Like, no, he's going to do big, bright colors and shit. Like, I don't think I'm pretty sure if that's the case, then Warner Brothers will, kick his ass off the project and get another director on board. I mean, so clearly he's going to be able to oblige to what they want.
But see, Jamie, will they take that chance? If you hire Aronofsky and then you kick him off, that's delayed you. That's crippled your operation. This movie, as you keep telling us, has to be made. It's got to be made now. They can't take the chance of hiring a director who might take it in a direction they're not comfortable to go and then kick him off and pay
him.
Well,
I mean, they've already...
That's what crippled Superman lives, all that bullshit.
Well, I mean, they have the script. They've got the script. They know, they've got that important part done. You already know they're already meeting with actors internally for the part. So, I mean, I've said this before. I get the impression whoever is cast, whoever is chosen as the director, is going to be given Superman and Lois already cast. Okay,
That happened on Superman Lives, too. They had a script, then they had Nicolas Cage, and then they had Tim Burton, and he decided to do his own thing, and it killed the project. A lot of things.
Yeah, but Tim Burton had power. I mean, I'm not not knocking off Aronofsky. You'll never hear me hear that, folks. But he doesn't really have much power as from a studio system, I'd say, because as we've been saying, he's been doing his movies independently. So, okay. I don't think that'd be a problem.
Okay. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. So, let's see.
Bob.
Yeah, we mentioned Bob Zemeckis a minute ago, and we were really taking a dump on him. I think, understandably, because he's wasted the last decade with motion capture crap. I liked Polar Express. It was cute enough, I thought. I don't know what you gentlemen thought.
It was cute. It just had no plot, that's all. It was a nice movie to look at.
It did have no plot. That's true, actually. Didn't check out Beowulf. Didn't check out Christmas Carol.
Don't.
I remember this conversation. And he's, I don't know, I mean, he's supposedly doing a Yellow Submarine reimagination or something.
Oh, no, he's not. Just say, I will summon all the dark forces of Liverpool to stop that from happening.
I find it funny that you're more upset about that than you say, like, him doing this purported Roger Rabbit sequel.
Well, for the entertainment purposes of the show, I'd just like to see you angry. You know, that's the only... I'm selfish about that. I'd like him to see that piss all over Roger Rabbit and get you angry, get you riled up.
It doesn't piss me off, because all of us have the original, so...
Damn.
Well, he's getting mature.
What? It's true.
My baby's all grown up. Well, we'll just have to stop that from happening as well.
Yeah, I mean, but so he's attached to direct a live-action feature called Timeless, which obviously involves time travel. No other details are really known at the moment. It's just kind of happy that he's directing a live-action movie finally after all these years. And it has been, actually. I mean, his last movie was Castaway as a live-action feature. Good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Never thought we'd stop here seeing him, you know, live with those kind of movies afterwards. But
still seemed like a commercial of FedEx, though. So
that's true, because that package was still in really good shape after all those years with the Angel Wings.
And apparently there was a phone in that box, too. He just never bothered to open that damn box.
Yeah, that's right. It's a special feature. It's a, what's it, a solar-powered...
cell phone, satellite phone.
Yeah, satellite phone with coverage around the world.
It's still the great question of, like, you know, I guess it can never be explained. I guess, I don't know if that was laziness or what. Why didn't he just open the box, see what's inside, and then keep the box with the angel wings on it? This will never be answered as to why he didn't do that. So,
because it was a plot device, Hawken. That's why.
It was his talisman.
I don't know.
Look at that damn box.
I didn't write the goddamn movie. You know what? It was a deleted scene. Wilson told him not to. How about that?
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I don't know. I was waiting for the moment in that movie where Wilson talked back to him, where we heard, like, in his mind, like, you heard a voiceover of, like, a voice for Wilson. Thank God they didn't go that way, though.
Oh, I would have loved that if the ball started shaking just so it did not a voice would vote. And it turned out to be the voice of Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. I'd like to see that stuff now that I think about it.
Get working on that, Internet.
Yeah, exactly. I want a YouTube video pronto. There probably is, like, YouTube videos of, like, that where they recut Castaway as, like, a, you know, supernatural movie where he's on an island. Actually, probably cut to footage of Lost, Lou.
Maybe. Or George Burns says God.
That's right. Wilson would be the voice of George Burns. Let's see. We wanted to wrap up this week's show. Phil has been talking about the last couple of weeks, but finally getting to see Back to the Future, one of my favorite movies, on the big screen again. Phil, how did that go, sir?
Yeah, I heard you named a website after it. How's that going, Jamie?
Decently.
Befuddling to me. It's not getting a release over there. I don't think so anyway, but it got its release. Just the first film, mind you, not the trilogy, which is a shame because I'd love to see the whole trilogy on the big screen. I only ever saw two in theaters. I only ever saw part two. It's one of my earliest memories of the movies, seeing Biff crash into that manure truck at the end of Back to the Future Part 2. Don't know why, it just is. But yesterday I finally saw Back to the Future Part 1 on the big screen, digitally remastered. I will say, for people who are looking forward to the Blu-ray release, the upcoming Blu-ray release, if this presentation is anything to go by, you've got nothing to worry about. It's never looked better. It was absolutely beautiful presentation of the film, and it was really, really great to see it with an audience. I don't actually like the film that much. It's a bag of shit, let's be honest, but still it was nice to see something on the big screen. But my only question about it really was
that was the fakest hatred I've ever heard.
It's really hard. I mean, you can't really sum up hatred for Back to the Future. Is that
I don't know many people. I don't think I've ever met anybody who doesn't like Back to the Future.
No, I mean, please comment.
I hate
Godfather.
Yeah. They might be indifferent to it, but that's about it.
Indifferent to the sequels.
Yeah.
Like, well, I dig the sequels, but, like, I would, I mean, you know, I certainly would just...
No, the first
one's
a perfect movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And it's one of those things that I really enjoy about watching a 25-year-old movie. Let that sink in for a second, folks. That movie is 25 years old. I am feeling old tonight. Apparently, age 30 is middle age now. It's considered middle age, which is really depressing because I'm 27.
You said that out loud, sir. We didn't force that one on you.
No, it's not. This movie made me feel old. But one of the really great things about seeing it is seeing it with... I was an eclectic audience. I mean, we were with old people, people my age, middle-aged people, young people, and there was a little 9-year-old boy in front of me as well. And I think they were seeing it for the first time. It's really, really,
really
great.
For the first time?
The first time, yeah.
Well, the 9-year-old, yeah, but the old people, it's a little hard to believe. Unless they
No, I mean, I don't know about them,
remember,
no.
You know.
Watch a movie. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. But it's really, really, it's really great to see a movie like that on the big screen. Secondly, see it with a crowd, which is an experience I've never had. Thirdly, see what still plays today, what they still work. And it is amazing watching that film because you do get the impression, as Bob Gale tells it on the documentary, well, the initial documentary on the initial DVD release, that the movie does start pretty slowly. And you don't, if you've not seen it before, you don't know where it's going. And you don't know where it's going until Marty's in the soda bar and sees his dad as a young guy for the first time.
Well, I mean, the movie starts kicking off when the Libyans decide to shoot Doc Brown. That's when it kind of kicks.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, it is true, though, that the movies, you know, like, seems like just a teen romance or like a social comedy about a guy feeling awkward. There's Huey Lewis songs. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, terrorists. And he's still there. Oh, and a car that disintegrates. You don't know where it's going. But when he sees his dad, that's when the movie, the cogs click into place. You finally understand, if you're watching it for the first time, what it's really about. And there's that great acknowledgement. You hear it through the audience. And I saw it last night. So it was really, really fantastic. Question I have to ask, though, really about it, is what are the movies out there? And this was a request, actually, for a topic by Lighthouse, our faithful commenter. What are movies would you like to see re-released on the big screen? Second question, what re-releases like this one do you actually think have a chance of proper financial success these days? We'll start with Lou, because you were late. Go ahead, Lou.
See, it gets me with my gotchies down, eh? This is kind of tough, because for me, my favorite movie, Shawshank Redemption, and I still would love to see it on the big screen, but I've seen it so many times now that I don't think seeing it on the big screen would have quite the same impact. I'm trying to think of something else, maybe like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or something like that, something that I haven't seen in a long time, or maybe even To Kill a Mockingbird, something like that. You know, some of these older movies that, for me, are older movies, even more older than for you guys, that I never had a chance to see ever on a big screen. So probably something like To Kill a Mockingbird or something like that, I would think.
Well, but Lou, my question is, though, if that did get a re-release, there's no real hook to releasing something like that, because they're not going to release it in 3D.
No.
They might. I mean, the selling point with this is that, of course, it's the anniversary and that it's a digital print and all of that.
Yep.
And unless I'm mistaken, there's no deleted footage of Libyan terrorists in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, so they can't
not
really sell it.
Not aware of.
No, so if they did release it, do you think it could actually be successful?
No.
Or would it just be you?
It would probably just be me and some other old farts.
I don't think any of these releases are that financially successful. It's just part of the, you know, the marketing. I don't.
Yeah. No.
It coincides with something. Otherwise, it's this is what the rep houses are for.
You see, yeah. you see, Star Wars did it so successfully 13 years ago, but there was a campaign behind that, which
there was a campaign. Those were special ed editions.
Yeah. Special. Well, it was a number of things. It was for the adults.
Anniversaries
it was.
And,
yeah. Well, I mean, for it was a lot of things. It was like for adults. It was, hey, you haven't seen them on the big screen in years since before you had kids. Your kids have only seen them on the small screen, so here's the chance.
Yeah,
and then for the nerds, it was like, hey, there's new footage.
Yeah.
We've updated Sean, so it got everybody interested.
Yeah.
And also, I don't think anything else was playing at the time.
There wasn't that too. So it was the perfect.
Yeah. But it was also because videotape was still around, so the quality was definitely not the same.
Right.
It will be very interesting to see how the 3D releases of these movies do.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Lou.
Oh,
because
man.
It's been finally confirmed what we all knew this week,
yeah.
that Star Wars is being re-released in DVD starting in 2012. Unfortunately, the horrible, harsh truth they all have to face is that Lucas is planning to release the movies in order, so that starts
once a year
with the prequels. Once a year? I don't know about that, Jamie. But he
nope,
has said that it starts...
Yeah, it's once a year.
Oh, my God, the man's insane. He's insane. He's lost it. Okay, all right, well, fine off. He said Phantom Menace being re-released in 3D in 2012. Fact is, who's going to see it? Really?
Nobody. It's not going to do well. I mean, you know, by then that's 2 years from now prepping to make sure. I mean, 3D will have probably lost even more muster, and it's already done so anyway. A movie that's been out in the market since 1999 that has kind of a mixed reception from the public. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I can't believe that. Once
so,
a year?
So basically when this whole thing ends, Phil and myself will be in our mid-30s. So...
Lucas could be dead by the time this thing, you know, wraps up. Let's put it like that.
Oh, man.
But his planet lives on.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, that you mentioned the original Star Wars re-release. I mean, good example, Spielberg tried it for E.T.
It didn't work.
But see, it didn't work because of the infamous replacing of the rifles with walkie-talkies.
Yeah. It's true. It
led to a good South Park joke, but that was horrible.
So, Ed, we'll go with you. Any movies that I mean, you? I guess obviously you do get an opportunity more than myself to see older movies,
right.
You know, on the big screen. But are there any movies that you really do want to see?
I personally, if I was to pick one, it's because it does not have a very good DVD release, and I unfortunately missed the chance to see this. When it was on the screen, although I bet the print was that great, which is William Friedkin's Sorcerer.
Yes.
I'd love to see this movie, and I've never been... The DVD is horrible. It's a full-frame, piss-poor DVD, and it seems like such a great movie that you should just get a nice, cleaned-up release. And
I've read apparently Friedkin likes it that way. He likes it in full frame.
I had heard that, and some guy had claimed that was complete nonsense.
I think that's nonsense.
Because his other movies got re-released, and they're all widescreen.
Hmm.
So this isn't like when Kubrick shot his stuff using full frame. This was just butchering. So no one likes pan and scan unless they're just playing dumb. So
there you go.
Still got a square television, which I do actually, but I haven't gone to plasma
dumb.
Yet. But no, not quite.
I know.
Fuck you very much. I'm not asking you, Jamie.
A widescreen DVD will play on a square TV. What are you talking about?
Well, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right. No, I kid.
I know.
Well, so what about you, Jamie? You must have tons you want to see.
Off the top of my head, and yeah, there are quite a few, but no brainer, man. Lawrence of Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
See a movie like that, like, you know, aspect ratio is supposed to be on the big goddamn screen. Absolutely. Yeah. Lawrence
now, are you talking full presentation with intermission in the middle?
Full
so you
presentation,
can...
dude.
Nah, I'd want that too. That's actually something that I'd really like to experience once. I mean, it seems, for a longest time it was Ben-Hur, but it's actually been eclipsed by El Cid. El Cid is the one I would want to see on the big screen more than anything. And I just want to experience one of those epics with an intermission in the middle. I absolutely love that. The only movie I've ever seen with an intermission was Oliver Stone's Alexander. And I've never been more grateful in my life for an intermission.
Yeah, and most of the audience left. They thought it was over. Like, oh,
I should have gone with them. I should have gone with them. I was the only one there, actually, with my friends. But yeah, that's an experience in itself. Also, I don't know if any of them exist anymore, but a Cinerama theater with a proper Cinerama film would be really, really, like How the West Was Won, that would be something I would absolutely love to experience. That's really what I want to do.
I don't know. I mean, what else? Maybe like some of the old Bond films, see them on the big screen. Mm-hmm. Some of the classic Connerys, the ones that are always my favorites, you know. Maybe those.
They used to play those in like double bills back when VHS wasn't common. They used to do that all the time. I had a really great story once from a friend of a friend once that they saw. I think I've told you this actually, Jamie. They went to see a double bill of Moonraker and For Your Eyes Only, which just of itself is a weird double bill.
That really is, actually.
But
the last two Roger, probably like 1982, and they're like the last two movies Roger Moore did together.
Yeah, exactly. Go to space, then come right down to Earth. That's
exactly.
But yeah, they saw it in an old flea pit theater, and apparently it was a presentation where they just played the movies back to back, and there was no break. And so my friend of a friend got sat on the back row, just sat there, got really comfortable, laid his head back, and about 4 hours later, it turns out his hair was covered in lice.
Oh
my God.
Yeah. Isn't that nice? Just thought I'd tell you that.
Back when theaters were like shitholes and stuff. That is a grindhouse theater, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly. Yeah, people get nostalgic and say, I wish theaters could be like they were in the old days. You try telling that to my friend of a friend.
I think I read about that too. Some dude was doing like they were talking about like horror movies of each year and like starting around like 1968. And when they went to 78, 79, they talked about Dawn of the Dead. I forget which year it came out in the States. They talked about how it played in this one theater forever, and like their theater had rats in it. Like that's just like disgusting. And like, yeah, you want to thinking like, oh yeah, back when we'd go see Dawn of the Dead and like that rat infested theater.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of funny to say in a grungy theater, but at the same time, yeah, there's some scary elements in there. So
yeah, exactly. Get diseases, you know, with that popcorn. Just good God.
People get stabbed, as Christina told us a couple of weeks ago. Although I don't think that was a flea pit theater, but just a bad film.
Might as well have been.
Yeah. movies.
I'm a fan.
Yeah.
They're okay.
All right. Well, I guess that's it, isn't it?
I guess that is it.
Let's make like a tree and get out of here.
That's a good way to end on, actually. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for that actually is very funny. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. We'll see you next week at the movies. Take it easy. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.